Welcome to Conversations with Creative Waco, the show that brings you the stories and voices shaping Central Texas's creative landscape. I'm your host, Fiona Bond. I love spring. The blue bonnets are out. I love seeing groups of graduating students doing photo shoots in around our murals and public art across downtown. Trees are bursting into life, and so is outdoor programming with live music, markets, and festivals all over the place. In today's show, I'll be joined by Braden Brazell, co-founder of Silent House Theatre, a company that has quickly gained a reputation for immersive, daring, fun, and thoughtful productions across some of Waco's most iconic and interesting spaces. And in our second half, I'll sit down with Josh Rizzo, Creative Waco's Director of Marketing and Communications, to talk about the new season of outdoor family-friendly concerts on Bridge Street, some exciting opportunities for young artists, and the challenge of growing visibility for artists and organizations across the creative ecosystem. Let's begin with theatre and the courage to create something raw and honest. My first guest is part of a new wave of theatre makers in Waco, artists who are not waiting for permission, but instead creating bold, original work and inviting audiences into something unexpected. Braden Brazell is one of the founders of Silent House Theatre, a company committed to immersive, innovative, and honest storytelling that challenges traditional ideas of performance and audience experience. Braden, welcome to Conversations with Creative Waco.
Hi, I'm glad to be here.
It's always great to have you on, and Silent House has very quickly developed a reputation for doing things differently. Tell us a little bit about how you were formed and what's at the heart of your work and why the title Silent House.
Yeah, so we formed during COVID. We had nothing else going on, and no one else did either. And we decided to put on a show. We were bored and decided to work on it. And of course, everything was closed down. And so we started in our living room, and we would just have actors come over and we would practice the play. You know, we were practicing A Streetcar Named Desire, and it was just fun.
Which, like, that in itself is a bold choice for your first production, a group of young adults presenting this very demanding piece.
Yes, 20 years old and just wanting to do something that nobody had ever seen before. It was one of our favorite plays and movies, you know, huge Marlon Brando and Vivien Leigh fans. And it was just raw. It was a very, it's a raw movie. It's a raw play. When you read it, you're like, oh, how am I supposed to feel about this? And we were like, yeah, that's our thing. You know, that's what we want to do. And so we worked on it for a year, which is absolutely nuts. You don't ever do that. You don't work on a show for a year like that. But because of COVID, we couldn't perform. You know, it was like every time we would pick a date, we would have to push it back. So finally, we got to perform in June of 21, I think. And
wow, that is a long preparation process.
It was very long. In fact, our entire cast changed, I think, except one person. So it was a huge shift. And we had no director. We just did it ourselves. We had no training. I mean, we have training because we grew up doing theater together, but not really a lot of formal training. And so we just kind of did it. And people came to see it. There was a good crowd that came to see it. And we kind of were like, okay, this is going to work. I think we want to do this more. We didn't even have a name. We were just doing it. You know, we had nothing.
So why the name Silent House? How did you come up with that?
Silent House, you know, I remember us just trying to figure out, again, there was no name when we started. I was like, do we just call it our play? Like, Braden's play. We could not decide. And finally, you know, we were talking about what we really care about in theater. And again, it's those raw dramatic moments where the house is silent. You know, it's like the actors, the technicians, the audience, everybody involved in the show. It is so silent because you all are engaged with the context of the play so much. You're so in it that you could hear a pin drop. And there was something, I love moments like that. I live for moments like that, actually, in writing, in books that I'm reading, in movies I'm watching, in conversations I'm having, certainly in the art that I'm putting on or witnessing, to feel like that feeling in your gut where you're just like, oh, yeah.
The universe just shifted.
Yeah, you feel it. And it's not
and
always
it did for not just me, but everyone in the room with
exactly. me. Exactly. We all know, you know, and even, a, you know, a good sermon can do that for you. You know, it's like you're like, oh, this is something that I can't, there's not a lot of words. It's silent, right? It's a silent house, you know? So that, as well as our component of having our shows, at least one of our shows interpreted for the deaf community, is a reason that we chose the name Silent House.
Well, and that's a real standout too, because I know Alex, one of your co-founders, mm-hmm. is very skilled as a sign language linguist.
Yeah.
And that you make sure that at least one performance of every show you do is targeted, is deaf community friendly.
Yes. Yeah. She has a really good standing within the deaf community and has put in the time and the effort to get to know the community, to really care about what's alive for them. And so because of that, again, it was just like, what lights you up? And that really lit her up. And we were like, okay, well, then let's make it a part of our work. And so we've worked with several deaf actors and have them in our shows. And it's just important to us.
Oh, and that's such an innovation that, you know, I find thrilling to watch you guys do. You know, starting a theater company is no small feat. I know there have been challenges, but what are the moments that really propel you forward? What has really kind of filled you with, hey, we are doing the right thing moments?
Oh my gosh, there's been so many of them, truly. I mean, we've had our big standout shows that have done that for us, like Cabaret was one of those, Godspell was one of those, Ride the Cyclone. There's been several shows where we just look at each other and we're like, oh, like, this is cool. And there's been lots of smaller moments, like working with new actors or having, you know, we've done a house tour where we've been inhabiting historic homes throughout Waco and getting to do shows inside of the houses, which allows for us to bring in people to these historic homes that they might have been driving by for their whole lives and have never been inside. So things like that, where it's like you have an idea and you're just gutsy enough to ask if you can do it, and then people say yes. I mean, that's the coolest thing about Waco, truly. Yeah. I say that all the time. I'm like, I know for a fact I couldn't pull this off anywhere else. Like, the fact that I grew up here, that we have a standing in Waco, that Waco is still small enough that we can use connections and opportunities, and it's affordable. Yeah. And mm-hmm. but it's not that small. People are out. People are wanting to do things. The community is thriving and growing. So it's like you get the best of both worlds. You get a big city and small town. And it's just, it really just makes it fun to see, like, oh, what can we do next, you know?
Well, and I think that thanks to your productions, I have now seen all of the historic homes with the Historic Waco Foundation.
Yeah.
Because you've done several productions in those. And mm-hmm. your most recent historic home production was at the Cooper House of Romeo and Juliet. That was, I have to say, hands down, the best production of Romeo and Juliet I've ever seen. Yeah. And I don't even like Shakespeare that much.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that was a triumph.
Well, and it was just fun to be in the house. There's something so fun for me. I'm a history person. And so I love to think about the people that came through the house before us and how we're just a part of its life. And it really proved to us, you know, we're a nomadic group, so we do not have a space of our own. And it really proved to us that, and we did Frankenstein in the McCullough House, which was significantly smaller, older, haunted, if you ask anyone.
No.
You could ask me,
wow.
and I'll tell you. There were so many weird things that happened, lights turning off and on, things going across the room that shouldn't. It was very strange. But we learned, we were like, if we can do a show here in this house, then we can do a show anywhere, you know, and it's like, they were impressive, beautiful shows with good lighting, good sound, good costumes, good set. I mean, yeah.
Amazing. Well, you have an upcoming show, April 10th to 12th, that puts women on the stage to tell their stories.
Yes.
It's called The She Show. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So we are doing The She Show, April 10th through the 12th at the Performing Arts Community Center. What we are doing, me and Melissa Lohr, who is the music director and my co-director as well, we are putting the show together and pulling women of Waco of all different ages, lifestyles, backgrounds, and we are asking them to tell their stories. So we have got people from truly all walks of life coming and doing monologues. We're singing songs that are classics in musical theater history and also just songs that you might know that you're just like, oh, that's such a feminine, there's a feminine theme into that song. But it's really what I really wanted to highlight. It's when we first had the idea, it was like, oh, this could be like the Vagina Monologues, which was such a pivotal piece of work in the 80s. But that only highlights one part of a woman's, of the woman's life.
Like experience, yeah.
Yeah, the experience. It's only one experience. And we wanted to highlight all of the different experiences of women. You know, there's just so many, whether you're talking about your motherhood or, you know, your relationship, or maybe it's completely different and it's about, you know, your work or truly anything, your past, your relationship with your mother, you know, whatever that looks like. We didn't want them to all look the same. So this show is going to have, we've got, our youngest is 10 years old.
Oh,
she's
wow.
going to be talking about her journey as a girl. You know, what is it like being 10 years old? All the way up to, you know, I think we've got somebody who, you know, is in her mid-70s, and she's talking about her life. So it's just going to be a fabulous night, or fabulous three nights, talking about the female experience.
Wonderful. I can't wait. And what's next for Science House Theatre? What are you working on at the moment?
Yes. So we've got a lot of things in the future for you guys, but I can't really announce them all yet. But please go to our website, silenthousetheater.com, for our upcoming auditions, for upcoming shows. They're going to be wonderful. You're going to want to be there. I can promise you that. It's going to be groundbreaking, dark, edgy, all the things, and raw. But I do want to tell you, we have actually just partnered with Michael Larson, who is doing a short film. And we're so excited about this. So we are doing, it's going to be called Almost, and we are filming it all around Waco. That's going to be going to launch Silent House into this film area. So we actually launched our first film. It was about Alice in Wonderland. Mm. And we launched that at our gala, which was on March 6th. But this is going to kind of really start the ball rolling on consistent film opportunities that we wanted to jump into.
That sounds fantastic. Well, I can't wait to see those. And Braden, thank you so much for bringing bold, imaginative, and truthful storytelling to Waco, and for reminding us that great storytelling often begins with a willingness to take risks. If Braden and Silent House Theatre are building new stages for storytelling, our next conversation is about making sure those stories are seen, heard, and connected to audiences in meaningful ways. But first, here's David Smith with David and Art right here on KWBU.
Art doesn't just reflect history, it helps shape it. Here's David Smith with this week's edition of David and Art on KWBU, Waco Public Radio.
As a maritime historian, one of the more striking ideas I've come across recently is one put forth by a naval history professor at King's College in London named Andrew Lambert. He shows that throughout history, there have been five what he calls sea power great powers, from Athens to Great Britain, along with Carthage, Venice, and the Dutch Republic along the way, the few great powers that have drawn their identity from the sea have used art and architecture to shape, portray, and reinforce that identity. In 1815, British artist J.M.W. Turner painted a picture that came to be known as The Rise of the Carthaginian Empire. It was a work designed in part to remind the English of something particular in the glow of their long-awaited final triumph over Napoleon secured at Waterloo that same year. The French emperor had often derisively referred to the English as the Carthaginians, with the implication he and France were Rome, ready to consign the country, its shopkeepers, and its navy to the ash heap of history. It didn't work out that way. Turner regarded the painting as his masterpiece, and at first actually wanted to be buried with it, but then thought better and left it to the British Museum with the stipulation that it always be on display. It's still there. It's still on display, as is another Turner maritime piece that we talked about last summer. Back in 1815, it was designed to remind people that the British were on the precipice of a new period in their history, one that, like Carthage, would be based on the sea. Being a sea power was a conscious choice that smaller powers could follow, intertwining its past, present, and future with life at sea, oceanic commerce, and the connections across the seas that navies, whether Athenian, Dutch, or English, made possible. They built maritime temples which served as prominent sea marks and navigation beacons, Lambert writes, and they embellished their public spaces with the art of sea power, creating distinctive cultural forms to express their divergent agenda. This consciously crafted identity spread beyond political elites and interested parties. It flowed into popular culture, pottery, coins, graffiti, books, and printed images. Whether it's hanging in our living room or appearing on our coinage, art has the power to remind us of who we are, whether we're a person, a family, or an entire country.
David and Art is produced by KWBU. Our full archive of episodes is available at kwbu.org. Look for David and Art in the Programs tab.
Welcome back to Conversations with Creative Waco on 103.3 FM, Waco's public radio. I'm your host, Fiona Bond. My next guest is someone usually working behind the scenes to make sure Waco's creative energy doesn't stay hidden, but instead reaches the audiences, partners, and opportunities it deserves. Josh Rizzo is the Director of Marketing and Communications for Creative Waco, where he leads efforts to amplify the visibility of artists, organizations, and cultural experiences across our city. His expertise is at the intersection of storytelling, strategy, and technology, and he's helping build a more connected and discoverable creative ecosystem. He started just last autumn, so is still in his first year, but is already making a big impact. Josh, welcome to Conversations with Creative Waco.
Thank you so much for having me.
Josh, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you ended up, firstly, in Waco, and secondly, in this role.
Sure, yeah. So I ended up in Waco. I went to Baylor University for my college. So I was about 16 when I moved to Texas. I was in Round Rock, and I was looking for schools, you know, trying to find out where to go. UT, A&M, they seem very promising for me, like most Texas kids in high school want to go to. But I ended up going to Baylor. They had a great scholarship available for me, and honestly, just the community was very nice. The campus was beautiful. I went to visit the campus. I just fell in love with it. So I walked around, and I stayed after college. So I graduated with a degree in fine arts, and I decided this was the city for me. I actually had a job at Waco Tours where we talked a little bit about the city, and as we were going through the streets, I just kind of decided this is it. Like, this is where I'm going to live my life, and I planted myself right then and there and stuck around ever since.
Well, and I think you ended up bringing your entire family to Waco.
Now,
right?
Yeah. About 5 or 6 years later, well, 3 years later, my sister bought a house here. And it was touching. She was like, I want you to feel like you have a home in Texas. And so she bought a house here as an investment to start, right? And she was like, no, you, this is for you. And then a few years later, just circumstances change and they move their entire nucleus family out here. And so, they started a restaurant in California. And so they brought the restaurant equipment over here. And so they started kind of doing stuff in like a food trailer type of situation. So
I love that your love for Waco drew your entire family together here. We are benefiting from the food, of course. Yeah. But this was no small feat because you have a large family, right?
Yeah.
And you're the baby.
About half my family's out here now. I still have half my family out in California, and so we'll visit from time to time, but we're trying to get everybody to.
I love that. You're such a great ambassador for Waco. And I remember I first met you when you were a student at Baylor and you were running a Hispanic festival with the Hispanic Student Association. You were one of our first grant recipients. And I remember thinking at the time, there's a guy who's going to go places. Apparently, the place was Waco. And it's great that we're now benefiting from you being here.
No, that was such a fun way to get to know Creative Waco in general, just because we were running that festival and we were like, we need more representation, right? And so we didn't know something like Creative Waco was a thing. And it was like, oh, okay, you support cultural events. And I didn't know that contributing to that so long ago would lead to kind of what I'm doing now. So that's
never know what's around the corner, especially as a creative, right? You have been all kinds of busy this season. You've had a ton of media interaction for new public art on the Steam Center, the utility boxes, and on 7th Street. But the big launch you're working on right now is the Levitt Amp concert series on Bridge Street, which starts on April the 9th. Tell us a little bit about how you go about trying to cut through the noise and reach an audience in Waco, because that's the one of the things that I know is a challenge for so many of our cultural and creative organizations. It's just like, how do you get your information out there?
That's a great question. And I think for Levitt specifically, our music series, what's going to break through the barrier is collaboration. Mm. I mean, the only thing that makes a difference between a local festival and like a larger festival is that we pay attention to the individual artists on a personal level, right?
Mm, so tell their stories.
Yeah. And we try to get their word out, their marketing out, their information out. So, And we put together playlists with their music. And yeah, it's a
part of it. So people can actually play the music before they come to the concert?
That's right. Yeah, we're putting together a Spotify playlist for all of the makers that are going to be at our Levitt Festival for the spring and in the fall.
So nice.
It's gonna be a good time. Yeah, yeah. But
for radio fans who like listening to stuff, that's a great plug. Yeah.
Yeah. The important part is that we are always we have a collaborative mindset when it comes to working with musicians and artists. I love it.
That's fantastic. And I know that, you know, just having seen a sneak peek of some of the info, storytelling and the, you know, the way that each concert is constructed from people who are got community groups as well as emerging artists and then also more regionally well-known artists.
Yeah. So we do have folks that are recognized at a national level. They do travel. We do have some folks that do travel to Waco, but we also have large portion available to local artists, and we try to promote local artists as much as we can because we want people to know, like, we have talent here in Waco. And this is, you know, music is one of the ways that we embrace culture at Creative Waco, and so Levitt allows us to do that, and that's a really fun way for us to be able to push that boundary.
And I love some of the stories of the artists who've ended up being able to do national tours or, you know, being picked for South by Southwest partly because they got their break doing a Levitt concert. You know, some of our local artists are now seeing that kind of success.
I love that. Yeah, and we really, our work is just to be that platform. If this is maybe your first time, if it's your, I don't know, in the middle of your career, like whatever, wherever you are in your career, if we can just provide that platform for artists, I mean, it's a great launching pad for anybody to start their career.
So the series has switched from Wednesdays to Thursdays. So it will be April 9th, Thursday, April 9th. Every other Thursday?
It will be every other Thursday. There is one Thursday, I believe May 7th, that will be pushed to the following week. So it'll be a back-to-back Thursday at that point. But it is on Thursdays, and the idea is to be able to get your family out throughout the week so you don't just have to wait until the weekend. But it's a nice family environment. We have a kids zone. We have food. We have artist vendors. So it really is fun for everybody. And so you can kind of let your kids play in the grass. And
like a mini festival on a Thursday night. How fun is that? And if the weather cooperates, that's even better.
Especially if the weather cooperates, yeah.
I love it. There are probably two questions, I think, that we get asked most, that I get asked most. One is, how can I find and it'll be a muralist or a theater camp or a film location, you name it. We get all kinds of inquiries. The other question is, how can I find out about what's going on in Waco? What do you say when folks ask you those questions? I know you get those questions too, and you're kind of right in the thick of it. How do we solve that problem of discoverability?
The first thing I'd say is subscribe to our newsletter. That's a very, very good way for you to get in touch with anything that's happening in the creative space in Waco. So we also love to put out events that happen in general. But the next thing I'll say is join our platform, Culturalist. We just adopted this platform about a few months ago, but it's a database of artists, events, and arts organizations in and around Waco, where they get to put in, you know, any of the events that are happening in and throughout the year. You can check your calendar against these events to see, you know, whose events you want to attend, if you are planning an event, to see if you need to kind of move things around. So it's a really good resource for both artists and individuals to find new spaces, new events, and new artists. We're always developing this platform, so we're actually in communications with the developer, and that's something that I really enjoy, is that we can spot any issues or any changes that we want to make, and they allow us to kind of work with them. And the best part about it is that as an artist, you create a profile on this platform, and you're not just visible to Waco. You're visible to the entire country and actually the entire world. So the SEO, which is a marketing,
like my search engine optimization, yes, for those in the know. Yeah.
it's phenomenal for any artist to be able to jump in and like kind of get their name out there. So this is a great way to get discoverable, especially in an age where automated intelligence is kind of looming over you. You're like, I don't really know what to do or how to take care of any of that. This provides a good structure for your information to be able to get recognized in the way that you want it to.
Well, and it kind of puts those who are producing programming or producing art in the driving seat, which I really love, because, you know, you look out at some of those aggregated calendars and they tend to be scrapers. Like they, I guess we're getting a little technical here, but they're basically pulling from things like Facebook and they're pulling from other platforms, but not necessarily the wording or the information that the artists themselves want to put out into the world. Mm-hmm. What I love about what you've done with Culturalist is it really puts the creatives in the driving seat, saying what they want to about their events or about their art, which means that you're getting really accurate information. Mm-hmm. But it also means that that will become what all of those scrapers are using to go out into the wider world. So
in addition to that,
discoverable, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But in addition to that, you also get access to opportunities, not just in Waco. So they could be job opportunities, call to actions, call for artists, things like that. But also nationwide opportunities in other states where they're looking for kind of external artists. So
that's a game changer, because mm-hmm. I think one of the stumbling blocks or one of the potential barriers to creatives living and working in Waco is that often the big opportunities, the big career defining opportunities aren't always in Waco. And so it's very, you know, it's you see a lot of people having to search for those opportunities elsewhere. If this platform is bringing those opportunities right to their door here in Waco, that's a game changer. Well, tell us a little bit about what else you're rolling out at the moment that might be of interest to listeners. I believe Art Apprenticeship for this year is
Art Apprenticeship. That is such a fantastic program. I mean, Stephen Yui, who's the program director for Art Apprenticeship, he's done a fantastic job planning this year's Art Apprenticeship, which is our arts apprentice program.
That's a whole lot easier to say.
Right. But basically, yeah, we work with high school students who are looking to get into the world of art and business. And so we just kind of teach them real technical skills on how to go about creating an invoice, talking to clients, painting a mural.
Pitching an idea.
Yeah. And we're going to be restoring a mural this year. And so that's a really great way to kind of get your hands on some of the project. But they also get their own personal studio space where they really get to dive into whatever their art is and then just learn all these skills and take classes from our mentors. So really fun program. And I think it embodies Creative Waco's mission and vision really, really well.
And they're paid to do it, right? It's a paid internship, which that blows my mind. I would have loved something like that at that age.
Oh,
so if you know a talented high school artist, encourage them to look for the Art Apprenticeship application online with Creative Waco. It's a cohort of, 20 students can be accepted to the program?
Yes.
It's a competitive process, but it's an amazing opportunity.
Yes.
And a great resume builder,
yes,
too.
Even if you're shy about it, we really encourage you to apply. You are guaranteed an interview if you make an application, because we do set the standard high, but we also know we need trainings to do that, right? So we really encourage you to apply.
Josh, thank you so much for helping build the connective tissue that allows creativity to move, grow, and reach people in meaningful ways. Thanks for being here.
Yeah.
What ties today's conversations together is this, that creativity doesn't exist in isolation. It needs stages, audiences, systems, and connection. And it needs you, the listening audience, to be part of the story. Silent House's She Show will be at the Performing Arts Community Center on Austin Avenue from April 10th to 12th, and tickets are available at the PAC or online. The Levitt Amp Waco concert series begins on April 9th with an exciting lineup of performers, and concerts will be there every other Thursday at the Bridge Street Plaza, where the Saturday Downtown Farmers Market takes place. The program runs until June and then starts again in the fall. And don't forget that Brazzers Theatre is doing improv on April 4th, 7:30 p.m. at the UU Fellowship. They are currently peripatetic in using different spaces around town. So make sure, just like Silent House, they don't have an actual theatre home. But if you follow them and some of our other peripatetic theatres, you will have the most amazing portfolio of events to discover. For the latest on arts and culture in Waco, be sure to subscribe to Waco Insider or the Waco Buzz and explore Culturalist to discover artists and events across our region. I'm Fiona Bond, and this has been Conversations with Creative Waco. Until next time, stay curious, stay creative, and make yourself part of the story by attending all the amazing arts programming emerging in Waco.